Good evening, everyone. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. Welcome to tonight's Soleri Teleseminar. Tonight I'm going to be your host. Byron Belitzis, our wonderful host, will return again when we begin our teleseminars on Soleri Investor Circles. This week and next week, I will be hosting as we continue our series on precious metals with some very special guests. Our series started last week with Precious Metals 101, where we talked about the advantages of saving and transacting with precious metals, particularly in a period when centralized financial systems, which I sometimes refer to as the tapeworm, are increasingly unreliable, and fiat currency such as the U.S. currency is falling in value. We discussed the pitfalls of holding wealth in precious metals, including the extent to which the market is manipulated and prices are extremely volatile. One of the ways we discussed saving in precious metals was by using silver and gold coins. Tonight we're discussing investing in silver and gold coins with Franklin Sanders of the Money Changers. Franklin Sanders is a precious metals dealer based in Tennessee and publishes the Money Changer newsletter. His market scorecard, the Money Changer Silver and Gold Report, I often describe as one of those rare newsletter emails that I always read. Before we start, I wanted to just tell a bit of a story about how I met Franklin Sanders. For when I first started to learn about precious metals and meet people in the precious metals world, often on people would say, well, have you met Franklin Sanders? And sort of this magic grew up around Franklin Sanders because he came so highly recommended by some of the people that I had come to know and trust, including James Turk, who we're going to do our teleseminar with next week. And so finally, you know, I got to the point where I was like, who is this guy anyway? So I started to learn more and go to his website and then eventually subscribe to his newsletter. But I decided, because Franklin lives in Tennessee and I live in Tennessee, that I would go visit him. So the way you find Franklin Sanders, because it's not easy, is if you drive a couple hours south of Nashville, Tennessee, which is in the middle of the state, you'll drive through some of the most beautiful farmland in the world. And you come to a place where, and Franklin told me this when I came, he said, you know, I'm going to have to drive out and get you. So he came on out, and he was right. It's many miles down a dirt road. You have to drive through a stream. It's unbelievable. And when you come out to a place called the Top of the World Farm, and when you're there, it does feel like the top of the world. And he and his family have not just the coin dealership and the newsletter operation, but a beautiful farm. And I've had dinner at Franklin's house, and I got to tell you, there's not a coin dealer in America that eats fresher and better and more wonderful food than Franklin Sanders. So he is also my neighbor in Tennessee. And so, Franklin, are you on? Welcome.
I'm here. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we've had quite a week in gold. European Central Bank just announced that they sold 47 tons.
Which makes it a lot easier to understand how the gold price was driven down in the last week or so.
Exactly. Well, what we thought we'd do, Franklin, tonight is start by just, let's assume that our listeners, we've got a wonderful group of listeners tonight, we're delighted to have you all listening. Let's assume that our listeners have never purchased gold and silver coins, and I thought what we'd do is first start, and if you could just describe a little bit about how long you've been doing this and how, when somebody's new to buying precious metals, how you, just walk us through how you get going.
Okay. I've been doing this since 1980, since May of 1980, so that's nearly 25 years. I think the first thing is to get a few terms straight. You'll hear me talk about spot gold and spot silver. And those are the benchmark prices that we use to gauge the price of different forms of physical gold and silver against. What it means is that's what you would pay if you bought 5,000 ounces of silver on the commodity exchange in New York to be paid for and received on the spot right there. So it's 5,000 ounces of silver or 100 ounces of gold. And it's the benchmark price. When New York is open, that's the benchmark price around the world. And since the futures markets in New York are larger than the futures markets anywhere else in the world, that's pretty much the prevailing price, at least when those markets are open. So then the next question becomes, do I want to buy gold or do I want to buy silver?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of ways to answer that. Obviously, silver is a lot more bulk and it's a lot more weight to fool with. But the real question, the only logical way I can answer that question is to look at what the relative value of the two is. And if you look through history, what you find out is that for most, well, let's say you had a chart that was 45 feet long.
Uh-huh.
And each foot on that chart represented 100 years of human history, a century. For all but the last 15 inches of that chart, the ratio, that is the number of ounces that it took of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold, would be less than 16.
Uh-huh.
And it's only in the last 15 inches that the price of gold in terms of silver ever gets greater than 16 ounces. If you look at the behavior then in the last century and a quarter, then what you see is that the historical high valuation, is 100 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. The low goes back to that 16 to 1 or slightly below it. So I wouldn't venture to say why that happens. I just know that it does happen, that the ratio gets out of whack and the silver becomes undervalued relative to gold. So when I have to answer the question, should I buy silver or should I buy gold, I look at that gold-silver ratio and I say, is it closer to 100 or is it closer to 16? And to figure the ratio is easy. You just take the spot price of silver and divide it into the spot price of gold, and that gives you the ratio. Right now, the ratio is about 60 to 1. That is, it takes 60 ounces of silver to buy an ounce of gold. So, obviously, silver is undervalued relative to gold and should, over the course of this bull market, rise about 4 times as fast as gold. It won't do that all at once because it goes in fits and starts and it goes up and it goes down. But over the course of the whole bull market, which we can expect to last maybe another 10 years, we ought to see this general trend that silver will become more valuable relative to gold.
So if I wanted to buy silver coins, how would I do it?
Well, I would buy the 90% silver, the U.S. 90% silver coins. There's several different ways that you can buy silver. You can buy bars of pure silver or little 1 ounce coins, privately minted coins of silver. Those are 99.9% pure silver, but the disadvantage of them is the size and the ability to divide them.
Right.
You can buy 1,000 ounce bars of silver, which are about the size of two big shoe boxes. Stacked on top of each other. The problem is you can't pick it up. 70 pounds in one small package like that is extremely difficult to deal with. And then when you get ready to sell it, nobody wants to buy it. You've got to ship it by air freight, and it's just a lot of trouble. 100-ounce bars, of course, are easier to handle. They weigh about 7 pounds apiece. But there again, you talk about two different economic outcomes. One is the catastrophe, the Armageddon, where the money breaks down, the dollar breaks down altogether, and you're faced with having to use gold and silver as money.
Right.
And in that case, you can't take your chisel and pare off a tenth of an ounce of silver off of a 100-ounce bar. It just doesn't work that way. That's one of the reasons I like the 90% coin. That's the dimes, quarters, and halves minted before 1965. Everybody knows what they are. They're widely traded. They happen to be the lowest priced form of physical silver. So they're a little cheaper than everything else, and it's just a little bit cheaper to trade them because the spread between buy and sell is
so. And I can buy those from by the bag.
You can buy them by the bag. The regular trading unit is $1,000 face value. That would be 2,000 halves, 4,000 quarters, or 10,000 dimes. But the good thing about it is that they're broken down into such small pieces. There are 14 dimes in an ounce of silver. So that's 14 different transactions. So there's a lot of flexibility there. Another thing I like about them is there's no argument about whether that's really silver or not. Nobody's going to say, well, I've never seen that refiner's mark before. I don't know who made that. I don't know if that's really silver. The whole purpose of coinage is to take that kind of difficulty out of the transaction and to make it easier to transact. Coinage, believe it or not, was not invented until about the 7th century B.C. And until that time, when people wanted to deal, wanted to buy something with gold and silver, they actually had to weigh out little ingots of gold and silver. And, of course, you didn't know if they were pure or not, if they were really what they claimed to be. And about 700 B.C., coins began to be minted. And the Greeks, of course, who were the technology nuts of their day, grabbed onto that very quickly and spread it all over the Mediterranean and the civilized world. So that's what coinage is about. It's about taking the guesswork out of dealing in precious metals. That's one. That's just another reason why I think the silver, the 90% silver coin, is the best thing to buy.
Now, if I buy gold coins, it's a lot less space, though.
60 to 1. I'll give you an idea. A bag of 90% silver coin today would cost about $5,300. So it has about the volume of a gallon and a half of milk, and it weighs 55 pounds.
So it's bigger than the normal safe deposit box.
Considerably bigger than the normal safe deposit box. On the other hand, with the same amount of money, I could buy about 12 one-ounce gold coins. That's a stack about a little bit bigger than a golf ball.
Now, one of the things I was amazed at when I first started to learn about this is that a lot of coins are purchased through the mail. So if I wanted to buy coins from you, I would call you up. And could you just walk through the procedure?
It's a lot like buying stocks. You have to understand that when you call me up and you say, I want to buy 10 gold coins, I actually turn around and buy those from somebody else, or I'm obligated down the line. So I give you my word, and you give me your word that you're buying at that particular price. So we lock in that price. And then regardless of what later happens in the market, I'm obligated to sell and you're obligated to buy at that price. So we know what we're going to pay for it. And then as soon as you send me your payment and your payment clears, then I actually send it to you most of the time by registered mail now. And it will actually come to your door. You will actually take possession of it. And then you're going to have to figure out something to do with it, someplace to keep it.
And one of the things I can do with it is I can put it in a safe deposit box at the bank. I can put it in a depository, and I can keep it at home.
Right. And of those three things, the first two are basically the same, unless you live in an area where there's a pretty high concentration of population. There probably won't be any private depositories. But they're basically under the same rules as the safe deposit department at a bank. So there's not much difference. The problem with doing that, Catherine, is that you're going to pay a little bit more to do business in physical gold and silver. If you think about that, it's logical because it's not like printing up a stock certificate or moving electrons around in someone's computer. Someone actually has to physically take this gold and silver out of a physical inventory, physically pack it, physically take it and ship it to you, and so forth. When you have it, what is the advantage of having physical gold and silver? Well, it's the ultimate cash,
right?
It's the ultimate money.
Right.
You have it in your hands where you can get it 24 hours a day. The fact is that, you know, governments can close down banks.
Right.
They did that in 1934. You know, they
right.
closed the banks. In the banking holiday when Franklin Roosevelt took power, and you couldn't get into the bank to get anything. So in my mind, if you're going to go to the extra expense and trouble of dealing with physical gold and silver, then you ought to go on and get all the benefits of it. And the primary benefit is that ultimate liquidity and having access to it all the time. People ask me, well, where should I hide this stuff? What should I do with it? And, you know, you have to think about what goes through the average burglar's mind. And I know it's hard for people to put themselves in that situation, but think what he wants to do. He wants to get in and out as quickly as he can. So he's not going to spend 3 hours in your house prying out the baseboards, trying to find where you've hidden your gold and silver. He doesn't even know if you've got any or not. What he's going to do is go in to your bedroom. He's going to look in your chest of drawers. He's going to look in your jewelry box. He's going to go through the clothes in your closet to see if you left any money in the pockets. He's going to go through all the other drawers and try and find the small, valuable things that he can steal. The best technique to thwart someone like that is the technique that Poe wrote about in the book, The Purloined Letter. If you remember that story, you remember that the key to the whole story was that there was this letter that had been stolen, and everyone was looking for the letter, but they couldn't find it because it was lying there on the desk, and nobody ever thought to look for it there. So what we want to do is to put it in a place nobody will ever think to look for it. For instance, with silver, if you've got a plastic bucket full of silver, it looks just like a paint bucket.
Right.
So if you've got 4, 5, 6 cans of paint in your garage, you just put it behind all those and stack the paint cans all around it. And very few burglars break into houses to steal old cans of paint. The same thing goes with looking through your house for places that are potential hiding places. The first example that comes to mind is the cabinet where your sink sits in the kitchen or in the bathroom. If you stand in front of that sink, there's a kick plate there, the inset where your toes are, has a kick plate. And you can pry that kick plate out, and there's enough room under there to put 2, 3, sometimes 4 bags of silver.
What most dealers tell me is that the major problem with keeping it at home is people forget where they put it.
Well, I've actually had customers who buried it in the ground and then forgot where they put it.
They put it, yeah.
Yeah, so plant a gardenia over wherever you bury it if you want to do that.
One of the things a lot of times I'll have people, usually European, in the audience who remember a time when the thing that fed their family was their gold and silver coins. And it's always fascinating to hear those stories, you know, particularly for Americans who've never heard them.
Right. It's fascinating, but it also teaches you a lesson. And that lesson is that the gold and silver won't do you any good if you don't have it in your hands.
Right.
I remember one Hungarian told me a story about his family during World War II. And their house in Budapest had actually been destroyed, and he and his father sneaked in at night with a shovel into the basement of the house, and he said that when he heard his father's spade hit the metal box that contained a few gold coins, he knew they'd be all right. He knew they'd survive. And after you've heard those stories over and over and over, they begin to make an indelible impression on your mind. And that's one of the reasons why, unless you know, there are very large amounts involved. I think you're much better off to try and secrete things in your own house.
You have something called the MAP, the Monthly Acquisition Plan, which I'm particularly enamored of. And when we launch the Larry Investor Circles, one of our model transactions is going to be your Monthly Acquisition Plan. And what I would love is for you to walk through how it works, because it's a way... You know, one of the challenges we have in America is people really don't think of money as a tool that they can master to invent their world. So I'll see so many people who say, well, I'm not an investor. But the MAP is a way that we could get together, you know, even if you have very little money, you can get together and combine your money and start to become an investor. So I would love it if you would walk through the Monthly Acquisition Plan, Franklin.
Okay. One of the reasons I started this plan, Catherine, and I've been doing it about nearly 25 years, is that for most small investors, there was no way to buy gold and silver without having to pay a small order charge, a very high small order charge. Let me give you an example of what I mean. Suppose that you had about $100 to invest, and you went to a coin dealer. Well, on a bullion trade, the commission is normally about 3.5%. And that's fine on a $10,000 order. That's a $350 commission. But on a $100 sale, that's $3.50, which is not much profit to live on. So if you go to buy one coin like that, instead of paying $85, you're probably going to pay $95 or $100. And I understand why the dealer does that. He's not trying to cheat anybody. It's just that he has to make a living on what he by what he does. So I came up with the idea of pooling a lot of orders, small orders, on the same day so that I wouldn't have to levy that small order charge. And the MAP plan is what I came up with. You can invest as little as $100 a month, and you don't have to invest. You're not obligated to invest. There's a $12 yearly fee because I have to bill it every month whether you invest or not. And as long as your payment reaches me by the 15th of the month, then I assume that you want to buy something that month. If you don't send anything, I assume you don't want to buy anything. We will take that all those $100 orders, and we'll pool them together. We'll take all the $150 orders and the $200 orders and the $500 orders, and we pool them together and sell everyone the same thing. For instance, let's say that you wanted primarily gold. Then right now, we couldn't sell you a British sovereign because they're a little bit over $100, and we couldn't sell you an American Eagle quarter-ounce coin because that's about $115. So the next thing that we can get would be a French 20 franc, which is about $83. So we'd set aside a French 20 franc for you, and then you have some balance there. It's going to cost about $350 to ship it to you. And then you have some balance there, and we just put the balance in 90% silver coin. So then about a week and a half later, you're going to get a package, and it's going to have your French 20 franc in there, and it's going to have some silver coin.
Now, it comes by U.S. mail. It comes registered?
Comes either registered or insured. And the only catch with the MAP program is that you have to go in $50 increments. In other words, you can do $100, $150, $200, but it wouldn't be possible to do this if I had 100 orders and every one of them were a different
right.
amount. It's just, it wouldn't work. And we've had, we have some people in that program that do $5,000 a month, and we have some that do, $100 a month.
Well, in fact, you sell to 49 states. You do not sell to Tennessee, so I've never been able to buy from you. But now that I'm in Montana, I can put in an order, correct?
You certainly can.
So I've made out a check. This is Solari's first purchase. And so we're going to participate in the April MAP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I send it to?
You send it to P.O. Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee, 38486. And normally I will send you a reminder at the beginning of the month.
Uh-huh.
And you just write on that reminder, I want gold or I want silver, and this is the amount that I want.
Okay, well, you know me. I want both. So I think I'm going to get one of the French 20 francs and then a little bit of silver.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that's great. The monthly acquisition plan. To me, it's a great way for people to come together and, you know, 10 people, $10 a month, start to learn about currency and money, and you start. You know, there's something magical when you take real money and you put it in your hand and you see it and you start to acquire it. So it's a way of creating intention to be an investor, a way of understanding a little bit more about currencies.
Right. Exactly.
Now, you've got something, Franklin, that I've sent out to the Solari Action Network that I love called the Ten Commandments of Buying Silver and Gold.
Right.
And if you could go through that, I'd just love it.
Okay. Can I address something you just said? That
oh, sure.
You spoke about currencies, and one of the chief things that investors in gold and silver have to understand is that gold and silver are alternative currencies. They're alternatives to the U.S. dollar. They're alternatives to the euro. They're alternatives to all of those currencies. You know, Americans especially are not used to dealing in currencies other than their own.
Right.
So they, you know, it's a little difficult for them to get this concept, but if you were to go, let's say you were going to take a trip to Europe, you would not go to Europe, to Milan, for example, and walk into the pizzeria in Milan and expect to pay for your supper with U.S. dollars. You have to have the currency of the country where you are. And in the same way, gold and silver are alternative currencies, except what we want to do is to take that, we want a currency that we'll be able to use 10 years from now. So
right.
We're traveling in time, we're not traveling in space. And that's what money is supposed to do. It's supposed to carry value across space and across time. And if your listeners start to understand that the reason you buy gold and silver is because the dollar is a failing currency.
Right.
And that's not a hypothetical thing with me. That's not some kind of theory. The facts are there. If you look at the value of the dollar in 1930 and compare that to the value of the dollar today, you'll find it's lost 95% of its value against gold.
Right. And I'm sure if I'm sending you a check in the mail for $100, the coins I get back I know will have a lot of value in 10 years. I don't believe the dollar will have much value.
No less a personage than Paul Volcker, who was once the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, has said that he thinks that within the next 10 years, there's a 75% chance there'll be a dollar crisis.
Right.
Well, he doesn't talk lightly. You know, when people in that station say that sort of thing, I have to believe that it's true. And
I believe it's true when you say it, Franklin. I don't take much weight from Paul Volcker.
But if you look at the dollar in the last 3 years, it's lost about a third of its value against all of its trading partners. The dollar index has dropped from 120 down to 80.5. Now, it's rallying a little bit this year and probably will rally some this year, but the course of it's down. And the people, the other currencies in the world, the other major currencies, the yen and the euro, can't afford for the dollar to be cheapened against their currencies because they fight with the United States for the very same export markets. And if the dollar depreciates too much below their currencies, then they lose those markets. So we've seen in this first wave of the first wave up of gold and silver, we've seen the dollar losing value against gold and silver. What
right.
will happen in this next leg is we'll see that gold and silver will be gaining value against all currencies, not
right.
only against the dollar.
Right.
So, well, let's look at those Ten Commandments that you
yes.
asked me about.
Now, these are up on your website.
Right. And they may be a little cloudy to some people, but maybe I can explain them. The first one is always take delivery. Catherine, the reason I put that in there is because in the 25 years that I've been in business, I have numerous times seen firms which you thought were large and well-managed suddenly go bankrupt, and when they store metals for their customers, the metals get thrown into the bankruptcy, and the people end up having nothing. The worst example I can tell you about is the Krugerrand Corporation, which back in the early 80s advertised that they were selling Krugerrands at spot, which was about 7% cheaper then than they are now. Well, when the eventual bankruptcy came and they opened up their safe, they actually had wooden bars painted gold and silver in the safe. So I've seen that so many times. If you're going to go to all of the trouble and expense of buying physical gold and silver, take delivery of it. Because that's the greatest benefit it has, is that it puts the ultimate cash in your hands at all times. So,
right. I've had bankers tell friends of mine that, when you buy the gold and you store it with them, in fact, they don't have all the gold that everybody thinks they own. So it's kind of fiat gold systems.
That's exactly right. All they have to have is claims on gold
right.
somewhere else. And or a way to hedge their exposure. So it's not the same thing when somebody says they're storing it for you. Now, you and I know there's one exception that I make to that rule, and that's you're going to talk to James Turk about that next week. But always take delivery. The second the second commandment is never buy premium if you can avoid it. And by premium, what I mean is the cost of a coin over the gold value or the silver value. For example, if gold was at $100 an ounce and you had to pay $110 for an American Eagle and it had an ounce of gold in it, then that coin would carry a 10% premium. What I wanted, I apply the same rule that my wife applies when she goes grocery shopping. I want to get the most gold and silver I can get for my money, just like she wants to get the most groceries she can get for her money.
Right.
And so I'm going to try to avoid those high premium coins. For example, U.S. $20 gold pieces minted before 1934. Those carry a premium of anywhere from 25 to 35, 50, even 100% or more. That's not an investment in gold. That's an investment in a coin.
Right.
And I want to avoid paying that premium. The third commandment is something like that. Buy bullion for business, numismatics for fun. Remember I said that what we're trying to do buying gold and silver is to get into an alternative currency that won't depreciate like the dollar does. So that means we want to buy gold and silver. We want to keep this investment as pure and uncomplicated as we can. Numismatics, of course, is the hobby of collecting coins.
Now, you've got to explain, because, you know, when I first got into this, Franklin, I thought bullion was bars as opposed to coins. And so the idea that bullion was bars and coins was confusing. And this thing, numismatics, which I, you know, how can I even say it? So let's stop and go back and explain what is bullion and what is numismatics.
Well, bullion is really any form of gold and silver that's traded primarily for its gold and silver content.
So when you buy bullion, whether it's bars or coins, you're paying for the gold and the silver, not for the brand advertising or
any of that stuff.
Right.
So you want to keep that as low as possible. Now, there's always going to be a little bit of premium because there's always markup. There's markup from the mint that strikes the coin. There's markup from everybody in the distribution chain that deals in it. But with gold, for instance, it ought to be under 7% and preferably down around 5%. And if you keep it low, then the total transaction cost you have going into the investment and coming out of the investment should be 10% or less. So when we say buy bullion for business, what we mean is if you want to hedge your currency risk, the risk of the U.S. dollar, you want to buy either bullion coins or bullion bars. I don't really recommend bullion bars because they're just they're not saleable if you get away from large cities. It's just like having an ounce of gold, an ounce bar of gold minted by Credit Suisse, for instance, is about as good in Tulsa as having an ounce of plutonium. Where are you gonna sell it? Nobody wants to deal with that. So numismatics, though, that's collecting coins. Those coins might have, for instance, a $1 gold piece has maybe $5 worth of gold in it, but the coin might sell for $1,200 or $1,500 or $15,000.
Right.
So the value comes from its rarity and scarcity. Rule number four, or commandment number four, is buy silver first and then gold. And I've got two reasons for that. First of all, silver, as I said before, is historically way undervalued to gold. But secondly, silver throughout all of the history of mankind has been the most common money used in daily commerce. And that's the reason why, Catherine, for instance, in so many languages, the word for money actually means silver or some kind of silver coin.
Right.
So if the worst came to pass, and I'm not saying the worst is going to come to pass, but I like to prepare for it anyway, if the worst came to pass and there was some kind of economic breakdown or currency collapse, with my silver coins, I could actually do business. I could go buy food for my family. If I have a one-ounce gold coin at that point, it might be worth the equivalent of $1,500 or $2,000. Where can I get change for that?
Right.
I don't want to buy $1,500 worth of food. So that's why I say buy silver first and then gold. Get a little stock of silver behind. Commandment number five is buy small gold first and then large. the rule with gold coins is that the smaller coins are more expensive than the larger coins. And by smaller, there's sort of two classes of gold coins. So the one-ounce class, the coins that are around 1 ounce, and then everything else. So I want to go on and, if I've got to pay a bigger premium, I want to go and pay the premium on the front end and get that small gold. There's another reason. It's not just the rising price, but another reason is the same as I mentioned in the last commandment, and that is if I have to use this gold for money day after day, I want small pieces.
Right.
I don't want to have to take change in goats or bushels of wheat or any of that. So
actually, what we used last week was pigs and cows.
Well, that's wealth, but it's not very liquid. Number six is never buy exotic coins or modern rarities or anything you don't understand. Sometimes you will be offered a very low price per ounce on a coin, but if it's something like an Iranian Pahlavi or a Saudi Guinea that nobody, dealers in this country don't know, they're not going to want to deal with it when you get ready to sell it, and you're going to have a hard time selling it. You know, my rule of thumb is if you can't read the alphabet on the coin, stay away from it.
If I buy a coin from you, then you stand to make a bid to buy it back.
Oh, certainly. Always.
Okay.
Yes, we make a two-way market in everything that we sell.
Okay.
Another thing you shouldn't buy is modern rarities. These are coins that are minted by various countries around the world, often very small countries, and they issue these coins for collectors. And they might be issued at twice or three times their gold content or silver content. Right when they first come out, they're a novelty, and people are willing to pay high prices for them. Shortly after that, all of that interest dies down, and so does the price of the coin. So it's just not a good idea to buy modern rarities. The next thing is don't buy anything you don't understand. And I would apply that same rule to anything. I've talked to so many investors in different fields over the course of my career who got into something they thought they understood, but they didn't really understand, but it sounded like a good deal, and they wound up losing their money. So,
and let me, in that respect, what I want to do is make sure the listeners know at the event resources page mm-hmm. for this teleseminar, there's links to lots of different parts of your website
mm-hmm.
and lots of to James Turk new book, which is terrific, and lots of resources in this MP3 file will be loaded on the website in approximately 24 hours, so you can listen to it again, because I know I have to listen to numismatics many times before I could understand it. So the idea of this, and Franklin, you've got a wonderful website that really makes it clear and basic. There's access there to whatever knowledge you need to really understand what you're doing.
Right, and to keep you out of the traps and pitfalls, that's what I'd like to do. Commandment number seven is know your dealer. I have to laugh a lot of times when I hear people talk about their doctors. You say, I've got a problem with my feet. I need to go to an orthopedic surgeon. And they say, oh, I know this doctor. He's wonderful. He's a wonderful doctor. And I have to laugh because they don't know how to judge. Most people don't know how to judge an orthopedic surgeon. He may be good. He may just have a good personality. And what they mean is that they like that person. But liking a person is not the best criterion for trusting your money to him.
Right.
So you need to go to a dealer who has been in business a while and has a reputation for integrity. Unfortunately, physicians, coin dealers tend to bury their mistakes. That is, people buy coins and they put them back for their grandchildren. They put them in a safe deposit box. They don't pull them out. They don't check them a lot and so forth. And so they might find out to their disappointment many years later that what they thought they had gotten was not what they thought they bought at all. So you need to know your dealer, and you need to make sure that he has a reputation for integrity, and because otherwise you're going to get in trouble. Commandment number eight is what governments can't find, they can't steal. In the last 40 years or 35 years in the gold and silver markets, one of the standard sales techniques has been to make people afraid of buying any kind of gold coin except numismatic gold coins, because the government confiscated all coins but those in 1934. Well, in the first place, that's not true. But in the second place, 80% of the gold in the country was never turned in. That was in people's hands. The gold that the government went after was the gold in the banks, the gold
right.
they could find. And if they don't know it's there, they don't know where to look for it, and they can't get it. Not that I think, really, that there is any danger of confiscation. Even the U.S. government very recently, in December, admitted that through a lawyer in the Treasury Department in a letter. So I don't think confiscation is a problem, but I think especially with physical gold and silver, you need to be careful to be discreet about what you've got.
One of the things I'd love you to do, Franklin, is to describe when they did confiscate the gold, what percentage it was of, or what it was in terms of wealth in the country, private wealth versus now.
Well, and this is one of the reasons, Catherine, that I don't think it's very likely there will ever be another gold confiscation. Gold in 1934 was the basis of the whole financial system. It was the basis of the monetary system. The banks had to keep 35% of their reserves in gold. So it was the base of the entire monetary system. What Franklin Roosevelt wanted to do was to inflate the money supply. He wanted to do that as a way to get the U.S. out of the depression. In order to do that, he had to get his hands on the gold so that he could inflate the money supply by issuing larger and larger amounts of paper against it. And today, that just is not an issue, because the gold is not part of the official money supply anymore. And the governments around the world have spent the last 80 years in a propaganda campaign against gold as money. They're not going to just suddenly turn around and go 180 degrees contrary to that propaganda campaign and that policy. If governments wanted to steal, well, let me go back to Willie Horton. Willie Horton was the famous bank robber in the 1930s, and somebody asked him one time, said, "Willie, why in the world do you rob banks?" And he said, "Because that's where the money is." And that is exactly what the government's going to do. The government is full of people who are not nice, and many of them are wicked, but they're not stupid, all of them. And so if they're going to try to steal a lot of money, they'll go where the money is. Where is that? It's in pension funds.
Right.
It's in IRAs. It's in 401Ks. And I wouldn't, if the government got its back up against the wall, I wouldn't be surprised if one morning you woke up to find out that the president had declared that everybody's 401Ks had been converted into government bonds, and you could have them anytime you want.
And in fact, what we've been seeing is that there, over the last 10 years, there's more and more rules and restrictions about where that money can go.
Right.
And what you're seeing is a significant differential between, you know, sort of the performance and investment opportunity in 401Ks and IRAs versus a global investor who's free to go wherever they want.
Right.
So it's a big difference.
Right. The money, it's very much restricted what you can do with that money. So I don't, for all those reasons, I don't think gold confiscation is a problem. Another reason is because the people who buy gold and silver tend to be very independent-minded, and they're not going to just roll over for a confiscation. If they think that they're family survival depends on their ownership of a little bit of gold and silver, they're not going to turn it over. The government would have a big fight getting it. It'd be very, very expensive. And like I said, they go where the money is, and the money is
right.
not in that. Commandment number 9 here is never swap bullion coins for U.S. $20 gold pieces. The $20 gold pieces have been the kind of the staple of the industry for a long time. That's the ones minted before 1935. And again, you know, the scare stories come out about confiscation and so forth. What you're doing when you swap bullion coins, which have a low premium, for 20s, is you take your low-cost bullion and you swap it for high-cost bullion.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose money doing that. It just doesn't make any sense. The last of these Ten Commandments is never break the law.
This is one of my favorite ones.
Well, it's just as a practical matter, the best policy to follow. I don't know what it is. I think that when people start looking to buy gold and silver and they talk to a few dealers and they hear this story about the government gold confiscation and so forth, which again is a fable, they get scared and they start wanting to do strange things. You know, they get worried about the so-called paper trail. I remember back in 99, we had a woman call us from another state, and she said, I want to buy gold and silver, but I don't want to leave any paper trail. And as it happened, she announced right on that she was calling from a payphone. I suppose that she thought that the CIA was interested in what she was doing. And so she was talking to my son, and she said, well, I want to buy some gold, but do I have to give you my name and address? And Justin didn't know what to say to her, because how were we going to get it to her if we didn't know her name and address? You know, address it to Mrs. X in Indiana, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, people even go to coin dealers and they say, I want to buy $15,000 worth of gold, but I want to pay you in cash. Well, if they do that to a coin dealer, because any amount over $10,000 in cash is supposed to be reported on a currency transaction report, the first thing the dealer is going to do is usher him out the door,
right,
if he has any sense, or else he's going to assume that they're a government agent sent in there to entrap him. So I just don't worry about the so-called paper trail when I'm buying gold and silver, because I don't believe that it's really anything to worry about, the whole confiscation thing. As I said, the government, through a lawyer in Treasury, issued a letter about 3 or 4 months ago, and in that letter they said there is not going to be, we do not have the authority to confiscate gold and silver, and so that's just not a problem.
It's now, in terms of tax policy, if I buy a gold coin and then sell it at a profit, the IRS code takes the position that I owe capital gains.
Not the code, but the IRS does.
The IRS does.
If they're enforcement,
okay,
of the code, they would take that position, right?
Okay, and then, but if I buy between states, so if I'm in Montana and on this purchase I buy from you, I don't pay sales tax.
No, there's no sales tax. That's interstate commerce, and sales tax is the tax imposed by the state. And so that doesn't apply to interstate sales.
So if I buy from a dealer in a state, then I've got to find out from them what the rules are that apply.
That's exactly right, because
okay. It's
different in every state. Some states exempt from sales tax any purchases of gold and silver over a certain amount. Some of them don't, and it's, you know, 49 different choices is what it is.
Well, I know, Franklin, that you're also interested in local investment. You know, the Solari model is very, very focused on financing places with equity and the opportunity in local investment. And one of the reasons that we're interested in your map being one of the model transactions is at the end of the Great Depression, there were over 3,000 community currencies in America. And as I go around the country speaking, there's an awful lot of interest in community currencies, although not a lot of knowledge about how to implement them. And one of the questions I've always had is, what is the role for precious metals in combination with community currencies? Because if I have a community currency that is backed by or connected to gold, that's something that is a global standard. And so my community can trade directly with China, because we have a common unit of storage and a common unit of pricing.
Well, that's the reason I find hilarious all these discussions about the need for a one-world currency today, or the threat of a one-world currency. Where have these people been for the last 4,500 years? We have a global currency. We have two of them, both gold and silver. And,
right.
You're exactly right. You can use that across any border. But one of the dreams that I've had, Catherine, in the last, 35 years that I've been interested in monetary reform, is to get people to use gold and silver in their daily transactions.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would actually be cheaper for them. They can't see that, but it would actually be cheaper. I remember a few, it's been probably 20 years ago now, a friend of mine in Little Rock had a barbecue, a little barbecue restaurant, and he had two price lists. One price list was in paper money, and a barbecue in paper money cost you $2.45, but if you were paying for it in silver coin, you could still get one for 35 cents.
Wow.
And it worked out the same for him, you see, because the value was the same. But if people have to get out of the mentality that the dollar is what's technically called their numeraire, it's the money that they think in. And once that gold and silver begins to circulate and people begin to physically touch it and realize, hey, when I make a trade with you, I'm getting something of value, some substance, in exchange for my substance that I'm giving you.
Well, I'll never forget the first time I hired somebody and I paid them with digital gold through gold money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty magical because they said, wow, I just got paid in gold. Now, there's a different feeling to it. Well, let me just remind our listeners, we're coming on to the hour. And if you have questions, and we're going to start taking questions in about 7 minutes, if you have questions, please remember to email them to info@solari.com, and we'll be taking your questions for about 12 minutes, starting at the top of the hour. Now, tell me, Franklin, what is your prediction for where gold and silver is going to be this year? Because I have to tell you, the volatility in the market for the last 6 months has kind of taken my breath away, so... I am hesitant to prophesy about what's going to happen in gold and silver. So I'm very interested, and I know our listeners are very interested to hear what you think is where this market's going over the 2005 period.
Well, let me just say something about that volatility. Because we think in terms of dollars, we think that the gold and silver markets are volatile. But if you think in terms of ounces, the way I do, it's the dollar that's volatile. That ounce.
Yeah, I always tell people, Franklin Sanders says, measure your wealth in ounces.
Well, that's what you ought to do, because that really is wealth. But you're right, it's been a very volatile year. The range on silver in the last 11 months has been from $8.21 an ounce down to $5.51 an ounce. The range on gold has been from about $390 to about $456. So there's been a lot of volatility. I mentioned earlier that the U.S. dollar in February 2002 began to drop, and the dollar index dropped from 120 down to 80.5 at the end of December. So in 3 years, it lost about a third of its value against the currencies of all its trading partners. I think what we're going to see this year is a recovery in the dollar. It doesn't mean that the primary trend has changed. The primary trend is still down. But as you know, things that are going down as a general trend go down a little and then up a little and down a little and so forth. So I think this year we're going to see that sort of snapback rally in the dollar as it tries to digest all of those losses of the last 3 years, and that will be hard on gold and silver. That is, it'll be hard for them to make headway against that. Actually, that's the best thing that could happen to people who want to accumulate gold and silver. See, we've seen this first run up, the first big wave up in the market, and that took silver from $4 to $8.21. It took gold from $252 up to $456. Now both gold and silver need to digest those gains. And so they'll come down a little bit, or they'll go sideways. That's fine. That's wonderful, because it means we can buy more at bargain basement prices. The thing is that you have to cultivate a special kind of patience, because if I go out today and I buy silver at $7.15 and I wake up tomorrow and it's at $6.80, I think I'm ruined. You know, I say, oh, my goodness, this is the biggest mistake I ever made. And, in fact, that happened to me when I first bought gold. I bought gold about $220 way back in the 70s, and immediately it plunged down to $190. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm ruined. But, you know, when it got up to $800, it didn't make much difference because it had increased four times over what I had paid for it.
Right.
I expect to see gold at least triple from where it is, which will take it up over $1,250 an ounce. I expect to see, and I'm talking about over the term of this bull market,
right.
over the term of the next 10 years, and I expect to see silver go from its present roughly $7 probably to about $80 an ounce. And the way that I figure that is, at the top of the market, it will only take about 16 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold.
Right.
So if you take $1,250 and you divide it by 16, you're going to come up with just about $80 an ounce.
My concern, Franklin, has been so often when we've expected the market to clear by a change in price, what we'll see is 9/11 or going to war in Iraq, and real covert or overt warfare that seems to shift economics instead of, you know, a change in price. So, as you know, my sort of philosophy is the tapeworm is financing different asset positions or managing different markets by, you know, essentially subsidizing, you know, and using the federal credit and a variety of other things we've talked about in these teleseminars. But that's my fear, is that somebody who takes a position in these things really does need to count their wealth in ounces, not in dollars, and has to be prepared for huge volatility in the dollar way above its actual economic value.
Right. But again, I think they ought to realize that the volatility is going to be there in the dollar as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, you know, if you say, well, I'm just not going to make a decision to invest in gold and silver, I'm just going to stay in the dollar, that's a decision too.
Right.
It's a decision that is going, in the long run, is going to ruin you.
Well, I don't know how to invest in anything that isn't manipulated other than in people, so.
Well, it's true that there's the powers that be manipulate the market. I don't argue with that. But the question is, are they bigger than everything else? Are they bigger than God, so to speak? Because, you know, Franklin Roosevelt came into power in 1934, and I realized that the powers at his disposal then were not as great as the powers that are at the disposal of, say, George Bush. But in spite of all the inflation that he could do, in spite of all the money he could spend, practically throwing $100 bills out the window, it took World War II to get this country out of the Depression.
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfect example of the power of primary trends. You know, the secret to investing, Catherine, and I know you know this better than I do, is you must align yourself with the primary trend.
Absolutely.
And by primary trend, I mean changes that occur and will persist for 10 to 20 years. For example, in 1982, when nobody thought anything of stocks, the stock market began a bull run that lasted 18 years. It didn't top until the spring of 2000. But now that it's topped, it's going to be another 10 to 20 years before it comes back. So if you align yourself with that primary trend that's headed down in stocks, you're just saying to the market, please come take my money.
Right.
And in the same
Well, there's way, something else in many cases, and it obviously depends on what you're investing in, but what many investors are investing in is we're investing our money at below market yields to finance companies that are coming in and destroying our community. So we're basically taking a loss on our money to finance the people who are killing us and our family. So,
and you're paying them to kill you.
Exactly.
You're paying them.
What a racket!
To destroy your way of life, and that
yeah.
doesn't make a bit of sense. But then, you know, the only other recommendation I can give other than gold or silver is to invest in some cattle and some farmland and get out of it altogether. But
well, that's what I said to you. You know, I wanted to redo your slogan and say invest your or measure your your wealth in ounces, acres, and hooves. Anybody who's got such beautiful Tennessee farmland, I'm sure, understands what I'm talking about. Well, we've got some great questions, Franklin. So why don't, if you're ready to switch gear,
sure.
Why don't we start going? The first question is in response to my question about buying what you sell. What do you mean by you stand to buy what you sell?
Well, when you get ready to sell, you have to have a place to go and sell it. And when whatever we sell, we'll buy back from you. All you have to do is call us up, tell us what you have, and then we'll buy it back from you at whatever the market price is. You send it to us, and as soon as it arrives, we send you payment for it.
So what we're saying is, whatever you sell, if somebody needs to sell it back, then you're prepared to give them a bid to do that.
Right. It's at least as liquid and probably a little more liquid than buying stocks or bonds.
Right. Okay, the second question, and this is a real one, what are the costs for shipping and for registration or insurance? Since I have no concept of the volume or weight of silver and gold, let's use the example of your spendable bullion portfolio number 3, 25,000. How large would it be? How much to ship and insure? What is your commission on 25,000?
Okay, my commission on 25,000 would be 3%, and which is about $750, and it would weigh, that's three bags of coin and a little gold coin, so it would cost right now about $25 a bag to send that to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it would cost about $75 to send it to you.
Does that include the insurance?
That's including shipping and insurance and everything.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, the price of shipping has gone down recently because of some changes the post office has made.
Oh, great. Okay. So here's another one. Is it true that you have to buy pre-1933 coins to avoid confiscation? Also, is there a law that says you have to buy at a premium in order to avoid confiscation? I know you're going to love this question, Franklin.
No, there's that is another fable that is circulated. First of all, people will tell you that if the coin has a premium of more than 15%, it means ipso facto that it is not subject to confiscation, that defines a so-called numismatic coin. That's not true. There's no basis in law for that. There's no regulation or statute that says that. There was a regulation that was proposed in 1984, I believe it was, but it was never passed. And the reasoning that that's based on is the Gold Reserve Act of 1934. And anyway, the 15% rule was never part of the original gold confiscation, so that won't confer any immunity from gold confiscation. There's no statute or regulation that exists that says that. That's the first part. The second part is confiscation is not a meaningful risk. I do not think that confiscation poses any meaningful threat. You're going to be captured by aliens before the government comes and confiscates your gold.
Well, but they might confiscate everything.
They might, right. And, of course, there's always the chance of that. But,
yeah.
I mean, understanding that these are people who are not ruled by law.
Right.
You know that, and I know that.
Right.
And so they do all sorts of lawless things. But
right.
As far as how it serves their own interests, confiscation would not in any way serve their interests right now.
And, you know, it's so important to me to find people, and that's why I was so glad that you and I are in cahoots, because it's so hard to find people who've really dealt, with the lawlessness of the government and come out the other side the winner, but understand what the risks are and know what we're really dealing with. So when Franklin says this, he's not saying this is somebody who's naive about, you know, what the Department of Justice is or how the tapeworm operates. Here's another question. In the event of a real economic collapse, how do we know that 10 silver dimes will be considered more valuable than one paper dollar?
Just wait and see. I mean, the reason I say that is markets are extremely efficient at transmitting that kind of knowledge. In 1980, I was in a gold and silver scrap buying business, and it was absolutely astounding to me that people who could not have spelled the word pennyweight 3 weeks before gold and silver hit their peak were in there selling gold in pennyweights, and they knew what price per pennyweight every dealer in the city of Memphis was giving at that time. So markets are very, very efficient at transmitting value and price. And so I don't think that will be a problem at all. What else are they going to use?
Right. It's very, I always tell people, it's very interesting if you sit in front of a group of children mm-hmm. with a $20 bill and a $20 gold coin
mm-hmm.
and you ask them which one they want. You know, it's very magical to see their response.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, here's another one. At one time, there was a 1/10 ounce gold coin. Who Grants in particular, is this denomination still available?
Yes, the 10th-ounce Krugerrands, the 10th-ounce American Eagles. In fact, all of the modern-issue bullion-type coins, which are issued by a number of countries, Australia, Singapore, China, Great Britain, United States, South Africa, there are probably others, too, Austria. Those are all issued in 10th-ounce, quarter-ounce, half-ounce, and 1-ounce denominations. The reason that I'm not particularly enthusiastic about those is the 10th-ounce coins normally carry a very high premium. Right now, they would they'll run, for instance, maybe $480 an ounce on a $425 gold market. So
okay.
It's a high premium. It's just too much to pay. Occasionally, we can get 10th Krugerrands, which they're not minting a lot of now, we can get those at a good price. But that's the, one of the reasons that I, in the fractional coins, I'd rather stick with British sovereigns or French 20 francs or Swiss 20 francs or any of the Mexican coins, because they're all at a low price. They're just about the same price as you'd pay for a 1-ounce coin.
Here's a great question, Franklin, which I have no idea what the answer is, but I bet you do. I'm considering moving abroad and wonder if there are great obstacles in bringing gold, silver into foreign countries.
That would depend on what foreign country you're going to. And actually, it's an interesting question because most of the modern issue gold coins, including the American Eagle, the Krugerrand, Canadian Maple Leaf, all of those coins are actually legal tender in their country of origin. So if you put 30 of those in your pockets, it would make a big bulge, but it would also cause a big problem for the legal authorities to prevent your bringing in.
Uh-huh.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I don't, most countries don't place any kind of duty on gold. Some may place a duty on silver, but I really don't know. It just would depend on where you're going.
Here's a tough one that I have thought about many times. If today there were gold in nations' vaults sufficient to back all outstanding money issued by those nations, all forms of official mediums of exchange, which would include things like treasury bills and bonds, what would the price of gold be today?
I've seen several different estimates on that. They range from about $5,500 an ounce to about $32,000 an ounce.
Ooh!
So there's no way that the market would clear at anything like the present gold value.
Right. Ooh. When is the last year that U.S. coins were made of pure silver? Also, what about other precious values, precious metal values, i.e. platinum, zinc, etc.? Is there any reason to consider them?
The last year that U.S. silver coins were made, and they were 90%. We've never had 99.9% pure silver coins because they won't. They're too soft. They won't wear in circulation, or they wear too quickly in circulation. 1965 for dimes, quarters, and halves. 1934 for silver dollars. As far as platinum and palladium are concerned, which are the other precious metals, they have never been used as money anywhere in the world. That is not to say that they won't benefit from exactly the same forces, currency depreciation, that's driving gold and silver up. They're a little trickier in that there are not as many people who trade in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have anything against them. It's just that they're a different market from gold and silver.
You're getting tested on one here. I heard what you said about not worrying about a paper trail, but for an inveterate mistrusting libertarian types like me, would you accept cash from someone who drove up to your business to take physical delivery right from you?
No. On two reasons. I don't make any sales in Tennessee. And two, I follow commandment number 10. I never break the law. And one of the things I'm specifically not going to do is to take currency over $10,000. I just wouldn't do that.
So, but is it against the law if it's less than $10,000?
No. No,
okay.
That's another question.
Okay, so you would sell cash for cash if it's under $10,000?
Right, but only to a maximum of $10,000 in any one year from any one
company. Okay, but you can't do it if it's Tennessee.
But that's right. I don't
right.
deliver anything in Tennessee anymore.
Right. Right, that's why I had to come to Montana to be able to buy from you, Franklin. Okay, well, I am Franklin again. I'm sending this check. It's Franklin Sanders, the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee 38486. All the information about how to find you to sign up for the Money Changer is on your website. Can you give your URL? And also, there's a special offer while we're doing this teleseminar for the Money Changer, which is a newsletter I love, which is both very sophisticated information on precious metals in the markets and some very down-home information on Tennessee. But there's a special offer, so could you go over your contact information and the special offer on the Money Changer?
Sure. My 800 number is 888-218-9226. Let me give it again. 888-218-9226. And the special offer for Solari members is that they can get a year's worth of the Money Changer, which normally is $149 a year, plus the book that I wrote this year called Why Silver Will Outperform Gold 400%, which is $199 value. They can get both of those for $99 if they'll call up and say, I'm a Solari member and I want the Solari special offer. The URL is www.the-moneychanger.com. That's www.t like Tom, H like Harry, E like Edward, - moneychanger.com. Unfortunately, if you go to just moneychanger.com, you'll get a very bad surprise because that's a porno site. I have nothing to do with that.
Okay, thank you so much, Franklin. Next week we're going to have the third and final Solari Teleseminar, Investing in Digital Gold with James Turk. We're looking forward to it and hope you can join us for that. And for our closing, let me bring on our wonderful prayer leader, Ileana Obadiah. Ileana, are you there?
I am, and good evening to everyone. And thank you so much, Franklin. What a blessing, because when we are all linked up together like this, the possibilities that open to understanding what we haven't known before draw us closer together to create the kind of world that we all want to live in. And so we just take a moment now together to go deep into the place where the connection to what your source of life and all abundance and the truth of what wants to happen for you and your family and your community and your world can come into being. Money, as Catherine always says, is the tool that we've been given to learn to master, to invent our world. So we stand together in the commitment to invent, to co-create together a world that works for everyone in complete abundance. And as we make our own decisions and our family decisions about how and where to invest and what to invest in, we remember that we're part of all that is. And that if there's a little hole in the rowboat and you happen to be on the top end, you can't say, well, my end isn't sinking, because we all are in it together. And so we ask for the wisdom and the grace to know how to take the gifts that we've been given, to invest them wisely, to share them generously. And we ask for blessing and protection for all those who are working in this world to make a safe place of integrity for everyone. Thank you, Franklin. Thank you, Catherine. And bless all of you. Good night.
Good night.